Des Moines almost feels like a second home. You know that? We get here and stay downtown and get to have a bite to eat at Centro, and if we're lucky, and enjoy the fine food and the hospitality and the warmth of the community. It really is great being here. And by the way, we're cognizant of the fact across the country of the impact of the drought and are concerned about what this is doing in the agriculture community and in various industries and employers that rely on agriculture and are looking for ways to help the farmers and those that are going to be most affected by the drought. We're looking for more rain. There are other things in our mind today as well. The tragedy in Wisconsin, where the Sikh temple was invaded by a gunman who was motivated by hate, racial hate, religious hate. It makes it even more tragic. And tragic, too, to have a people that are known for their peaceability and their loving nature to be so brutally attacked. We're thinking of them, and our hearts go out to them and to their community across the nation. This is a difficult time for a lot of Americans. American people are tired of being tired. This economy has been tough for a long time. Normally, when you have a recession, you put in place policies that cause a quick rebound after the recession is over. When Ronald Reagan was president, for instance, unemployment got up, I think it was to 10.6%. But then it came roaring back, the economy did. As many as a million jobs a month were created. And we got back to a level of employment that showed people that America's economy was strong and vibrant and that people could go back to work. But this president's policies have not done that. President Obama came in with a lot of promises. He said we could measure progress by a number of things. He said, one, you'd know if we were having progress and success by whether people could find a job. And he said if we let him borrow $787 billion, he would keep unemployment below 8%. It has not been below 8% since. It is now 42 straight months with unemployment above 8%. And that's not the full picture, because that just includes those that are looking for work and sign up for unemployment, and that's part of the pool, but there are also people who dropped out and people who have part-time work that need full-time jobs. When you add those in, it's 15% of Americans. And then there are other people who have work, but the job is not the kind of job they've had in the past, and they're having a hard time making ends meet, particularly when expenses go up. Because you see, the president also said when he was running that he would reduce the cost of health insurance by $2,500 a family. Instead, it's gone up by $2,500 a family. That's a $5,000 difference. This has really hit middle-income families. Gasoline prices doubled. Food prices are up. It's tough to be middle class in America today. And a lot of folks that are in the middle class have now found themselves falling into poverty, having to go on food stamps. This is very different than the kind of record that occurred under Ronald Reagan. And the president's policies have simply failed the American people in terms of getting people back to work with rising incomes. It said the best predictor of future performance is what's happened in the past. And that's a measure of the president's policies in the past: health insurance premiums going up, unemployment high, wage growth. Do you know what's happened to the median income in America over the last 3.5 years? It's dropped by $4,000 a family. Think how tough this is on the American people. Another promise the president made: he cut the deficit in half. Yeah. How's that worked out, huh? Instead of cutting it in half, he actually doubled it and more. The first president in history to have a deficit above $1 trillion. Now $4 trillion deficits in a row. He's on track in 4 years to put together almost as much debt held by the public as all the prior presidents combined. Now and then I speak to groups like here at Central Campus, which include a number of students, and I say, a bit tongue-in-cheek, I don't know how any of you could vote for a Democrat. I don't really mean that you can't vote for people in opposition parties, and it's good to have two parties, but you know, we have a president and a few people around him who are making it harder for the coming generation. I hope young people understand that this president's policies, which build trillion-dollar deficits a year, are putting in place debt obligations you will have to pay as young people. My generation will be long gone. You'll be paying the interest and the principal throughout your lives for burdens that paid for us, not for the ones that paid for you, but for us. I think it's not just bad economics. I think it's immoral for us to continue to spend money that's getting passed on to you with debts overwhelming you. And so if past performance is the best guide for what the future is going to be like, I think people understand that if in this year of choice between two different paths, if they vote to reelect President Obama, they got a pretty good idea what's coming. And it will be chronic high levels of unemployment, as far as the eye can see, stagnant wage growth, and the potential for economic calamity given the massive debt and unfunded liabilities that this country has. Now, I have a very different view about where America can go. I happen to believe that we're on the verge of an extraordinary rebound in America's economy with good jobs and rising incomes again. It's my view that if we take a different course than the one that's been laid out by President Obama and instead build an economy based upon freedom, economic freedom, allowing free people to pursue their dreams, to enhance their skills, to get better education, to reach for personal achievement. If we do these things, you're going to see this economy come back. And there are five steps I'd take, five steps in my plan, which will get America working again. And you heard Dr. Mack in his introduction describe them very briefly, but let me just describe them for you. Number one, we have got to take advantage of America's extraordinary energy resources: coal, oil, gas, nuclear, renewables, wind, solar, ethanol, you name it. We've got to take advantage of all of them. And we have an enormous advantage relative to other countries. There was an article written some weeks ago in the Washington Post by a columnist there who looked at studies that said within 10 years, America could be the largest energy producer in the world. Think of that. What that means, by the way, is not just great jobs in the energy sector, but it also means that manufacturing is going to want to come back here because of the low-cost, abundant energy. And that's the best way to get wages to go up and to grow a permanent middle class is to have jobs come back and have employers competing, trying to hire people, so they have to raise their wages and benefits to bring them into their enterprise. That's what I want to do. One, step one, by taking advantage of our energy resources. Number two, I want to make sure that our adults and our kids have the skills to succeed. What happens here at Central Campus is that young people, and some a little older, are able to come here and get skills of a wide variety that will allow them to be successful in the jobs of today. I want better education programs for people who are adults and for young people. Look, our schools are performing in the bottom third or bottom quartile of the nation. Excuse me, of the world. Think of that. America, the place that invented public education, has on average student performance in the bottom. How can we possibly imagine that our industries and our economy will lead the world if those coming through our education system are performing in the bottom third? I want to make sure that we finally put our kids first, our parents first. I want to make sure that every parent has a choice of which school to send their child to, and every child has a chance to succeed. And you see, in that spirit, there was an extraordinary accomplishment a couple of decades ago, and that was to recognize that work and providing people with the skills and opportunity for work would enhance not only the lives of the individuals involved, but the entire nation. And so welfare was reformed. President Clinton and the Republicans who were in Congress at the time came together on a bipartisan basis and said, welfare in the future is going to require work. People who receive payments from government are going to be required to work, not as a punitive measure, but as a gift. Work is enhancing. Work is elevating. And there were some who said, oh, this will be terrible. They'll be poor on the streets. You know what happened? As a result of putting work together with welfare, the number of people on welfare was cut in half. Poverty was reduced. 5 straight years, the level of poverty in this country came down. It was an extraordinary success. Back at that time, then Senator Obama was opposed to putting work together with welfare. Now he's president. And just a few days ago, he put that original intent in place. With a very careful executive action, he removed the requirement of work from welfare. It is wrong to make any change that would make America more of a nation of government dependency. We must restore, and I will restore, work into welfare. Again, past performance is a good measure of what's going to happen in the future, and the president's past opposition to work requirements are a pretty good indication of what he's now done. In my case, when I was serving as governor, my legislature passed a bill that would have taken out some of the work requirements. I vetoed it. And then I went to work to try and extend and to improve and to require even more work requirements, because I want more people working if they're going to receive government assistance. So five steps I mentioned. Number one is energy. Number two, the skills to succeed, an opportunity for work with good skills. Number three, we have to make sure that trade works for America. Nations like ours, yeah. Nations like ours that are highly productive. By the way, the word productive or productivity means that the output per person in America is high. As a matter of fact, it's the highest of any major nation. We make more stuff and more services per person than any other nation on earth. And because we're a high productivity nation, it's good for us and for our economic well-being to trade with other nations. And so I want to have more trade with places like Latin America that have a growing middle class. And we have advantages. We're in the same hemisphere. A lot of folks speak the languages of Latin America, Portuguese and Spanish. I want to take advantage of those opportunities to sell more goods across the world, and particularly in this hemisphere. But I'll also crack down on any nation that cheats, like China. We're not going to let people run over us and steal our jobs. The fourth part of my jobs plan to grow a strong middle class with more jobs and more take-home pay. The fourth element is to finally get America to cut the deficit and get ourselves on track to have a balanced budget. If entrepreneurs and business people around the world and here at home think that at some point America is going to become like Greece or like Spain or Italy or like California, I'm just kidding about that one, but if they think... In some ways, if they think we're going to get to a point of massive deficits and the potential for economic challenge, why, they're going to have a hard time investing in America. We're going to have to show them that we're serious about reining in our excesses and not passing on burdens to such a level to the next generation that they can't lift themselves up by virtue of the burden on their back, and that there's a threat that the entire economy could be put in jeopardy. And so we're going to have to get ourselves on track to balance our budget. And I know how I'll do that. I'll begin by looking at every single government program and ask this question. Is this program so critical it's worth borrowing money from China to pay for it? And at the top of my list of programs we don't need is one that costs $100 billion a year I'm going to get rid of, and that's Obamacare. And by the way, that doesn't mean that health care is perfect. We've got to do some reforms in health care, and I have some experience doing that, as you know, and I know how to make a better setting than the one we have in health care. I want to make sure that those with pre-existing conditions are able to get insurance, and that people don't have to worry about being dropped from their insurance coverage, and that health insurance is available to all people. And I want to bring the cost of health care down. The cost of health care. The fact the president said he would lower premiums by $2,500 and they've gone up by $2,500 should tell him what he put in place is not working and will not work. And by the way, if Obamacare were allowed to stand, you're going to see health insurance premiums skyrocket. And the American people are not going to stand for it. Let me go on to the next one. So number one was energy. Number two were the skills to succeed. Number three, trade that works for America. Number four, getting us to reduce our spending, to balance our budget ultimately. And number five is to champion small business. You realize over the last 15 years, I think it's 64% or 65% of all the jobs created in America were created by small business. Now, interestingly, during the Obama administration, we've now hit a 30-year low in new business formation of small businesses. People in small business have pulled back for a lot of reasons. And I want to champion small business to once again get entrepreneurs to open businesses, because these small businesses are how we create jobs. And my priority is jobs. My priority is more jobs and more take-home pay for middle-income Americans. So I want to help small business. How do I do that? Well, I want to make sure that the tax rates on small business aren't raised. The president would raise them. That's something I don't want to have happen. Number two, I want regulators to see their job as encouraging business, not crushing it with unneeded and outmoded regulation. I surely believe in the right of people to organize and join unions if they'd like to, but I don't believe that unions should be forced on employees who don't want to join a union. So we're going to have an administration that makes it easier to start a business, to grow a business. And by the way, one more thing, and that is small business these days, they're having a hard time getting loans. They're finding that the community banks aren't able to help them as they have in the past. And it's a strange thing, because they put in place this big bill called the Dodd-Frank bill, and it was designed to keep the big banks from getting too big, the too big to fail banks. But what's happened since it's passed is the bigger banks have gotten bigger. And the small and community banks that loan to small businesses, they're the ones that are getting crushed by this legislation and by all the regulation. So the legislation has had the opposite effect of what was actually needed. I'm going to do everything in my power to help small business succeed so we can have more jobs and more take-home pay in America. And let me tell you where it takes us. If we do those five things, we're going to have 12 million new jobs in America during my term. And Americans, yeah. And Americans are going to see more take-home pay. And let me tell you, I know what's going to happen. And the reason I know that is because I've seen the American people, and I know something about the spirit of this country. If we get government out of the way, if it's a friend of entrepreneurship and economic freedom, why, you're going to see those things blossom again as they have in the past. I've seen something about the entrepreneurial spirit in this country. It's still there. I was with one of my favorite stories. I was with a woman who was with a group of women-owned businesses. And this one woman, I asked her, how'd you start your company? And she said, well, my husband lost his job. And he took a class in upholstering. And I thought that was an unusual class to take, but it was what he liked. And then she said, because she was the better business mind in the family, she started a company and hired her husband as her first employee. And she went on to hire, I think she said, 39 more people in an upholstering business, and now has one of the leading upholstering businesses in her region. I met another guy named Jim Leotode. Jim didn't do so well in traditional high school. As a matter of fact, well, he scored. It was number two in his class from the bottom. And Jim went to his dad and asked for a loan. Said he wanted to start a business. And his dad said, well, okay, gave him a loan. And then Jim went out and tried to buy one of these griddles to make hamburgers and these roller things to make hot dogs. And then the hood you have to put over it to capture the, you know, the smoke and so forth. And when he priced all this out, he recognized he didn't have enough money to begin a restaurant like that. And actually, the amount of money he had was only sufficient, he figured, to actually make sandwiches. So he got some tables, set them up in a garage, and started making sandwiches and then delivering them. Now Jim Leotode, or you may know him as Jimmy John, has 1,500 restaurants across America. He employs 60,000 people. 60,000 people. Entrepreneurship, innovativeness, creativeness. It's what makes this economy the most powerful and dynamic in the world. And what's happening in Washington is that you have a president and bureaucrats around him who've never worked in small business, who've never worked in the private sector, who don't understand what it's like to have these burdens come from Washington day in and day out, to have people who've never worked in business telling business how to run itself. I want to make America the best place in the world for entrepreneurs and innovators and small businesses and big businesses. Why? Because I want more jobs and more take-home pay for the American people, and I'm going to get it done. Of course, we take care in America of the people who can't care for themselves. When it comes to the spirit of America, I want to restore the spirit of independence. I do not want to install a spirit of dependence on government. And that's the direction we're headed in. I don't want America to become like Europe. We're seeing what's happening in Europe. 4 years ago, when the then candidate Obama took the stage at the Democrat convention and made all of his promises, he stood in front of Greek columns. My guess is he's not going to want to be reminding us of Greek columns this year. But that's where he'd take us, I'm afraid, if his policies were put in place. We have a very different view about the role of America. I was actually in Poland last week. I got to meet a world hero, Lech Walesa. And he said to me this. He said, "The world needs American leadership. We need you. We need American leadership." And we spoke for a while, and following our chat with one another, he effectively endorsed my campaign. That came as an unusual thing, but something I welcomed from a hero like that. I love the power of individuals, the power of individual people changing the world, changing their lives, changing their community. It's the story of America. The founders explained how America would be different than any other nation on earth at the time they wrote the Declaration of Independence. They said that government did not create our rights. No, what they said was that the Creator endowed us with rights. And among those rights were life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. In this nation, we're free to pursue happiness as we choose. And as a young person strives to make the honor roll, we recognize that that's part of the story of America, individual achievement and initiative. When an individual goes back to school to get a better skill and a better trade, to get a promotion, we acknowledge that individual achievement. When a person starts a business and grows it, we congratulate them. We don't denigrate them. When the president said the other day that if you have a business, you didn't do that, someone else did that for you, I was taken aback. He said, "Well, you took me out of context." Then I read the context. It's even worse than the quote. He said, you know, these people who start these businesses and so forth, they didn't build it. He said, you know, they think they're smart, but there are a lot of smart people. Said they think they work hard, but a lot of people work hard. I'm not sure where he's going with that. My own view is we celebrate success. We celebrate people who are hard working and people who are smart and who take risks and build enterprises. He looks at government as a source of our greatness. I look at the American people as a source of our greatness. When that kid gets the honor roll, I realized to get to school, he had to go on a bus. And the bus driver had to drive the bus. But when he makes the honor roll, I don't credit the bus driver. I credit the kid who got the honor roll. And when Jimmy John and when Jimmy John made sandwiches in his garage and worked, I mean, he was telling us 18, 20-hour days. When he worked like that, and with other people came in and joined him, I credit them with having built that enterprise, not government. This is a time to recognize the greatness of the American individual, to restore our freedoms and liberty, to have government do the job it was intended to do, which is to encourage liberty, encourage freedom, encourage risk-taking, and to acknowledge and celebrate those that have been successful. I don't want to change America. I don't want to turn America into something we wouldn't recognize. I want to restore to America the principles that made us the hope of the earth. And with your help, if we win in Iowa, and you're going to help me win in Iowa, we're going to take back the White House. Thank you so much.